old path, where the good way is. Timeless truth from the Bible, Christian teaching, thought and meditations from prior times, read by missionary to Africa, James Robinet.
The Vanity of Thoughts by Thomas Goodwin, 1600 through 1680. The positive vanity of our thoughts to evil. 1. Foolishness. The vanity of them discovers itself in that which Christ calls foolishness, Mark 7, verse 22. That is the kind of thoughts that madmen have. This foolishness is seen in the unsettled wantonness, the wavering of the mind in thinking. Solomon says the eyes of a fool are in the ends of the earth, Proverbs 17, verse 24. They run up and down from one end of the earth to the other, shooting and streaming. And though the mind of man is truly nimble and able to run from one end of the earth to the other, that being its strength and excellence, yet God would have this strength and nimbleness put to a steady directing of our thoughts toward His glory, our own salvation, the good of others, etc. He gave our minds nimbleness to turn away from evil, even the first appearance of it. As we are to walk in God's ways, so every single thought, like every action, is a step and ought to be a steady one. Make straight paths for your feet, Hebrews 12, verse 13. Turn not to the right or to the left until we come to the journey's end of that business we are supposed to be thinking of. But our thoughts, at best, are like wanton spaniels. They indeed go after their master and come to their journey's end with him, but they run after every bird. They wildly pursue every flock of sheep they see. This unsteadiness is from the curse on the mind of man, like Cain, who was driven from the presence of the Lord, Genesis 4, verse 16. Our minds are vagabonds. Our eyes are in the end of the earth. This foolishness is also seen in the independence of our thoughts. They often hang together like ropes of sand. We see this in dreams. But not only then, for when we are awake, even when we set ourselves to be most serious, how often our thoughts jingle and run backward. As wanton boys sometimes scribble broken words which make no sense, so our thoughts sometimes are. And if you could but read over what you have thought as you can what you have written, you would find as much nonsense in your thoughts as you will find in madmen's speeches. This madness, this distemper, is in the mind since the fall, though it may not appear in our words. So much so that if notes were taken of our multitude of thoughts, we would find our thoughts to be so vagrant that we would wonder how they came in, from where they came from, and where they were attempting to go. But God does all things in weight, in number, and measure. And so His image in us will do also, so far as it is renewed, because our thoughts are unsettled, and because they are so independent of one another, our thoughts often have no issue, gain no perfection. We wilder away our time in thinking of nothing, as Seneca said of men's lives, that they are like ships tossed up and down at sea, so it may be said that our thoughts have tossed much, but sailed nowhere. Number 2, strong desires. But on the contrary, if any strong lust or violent passion is up, then our thoughts are all too fixed and intent. They run insofar on sinful objects that they cannot be pulled out again or even diverted. This is another vanity, for our thoughts and our understanding part was ordered to moderate, allay, and cool, to take off our passions when they are running over. They are to rule and govern them, but now our thoughts are themselves subjected to our affections. They are like fuel put under our lusts, and they make them boil the more. And although our thoughts do at first stir up our fears, joys, desires, etc., yet these once stirred up come to chain and fix and hold our thoughts to those objects so that we cannot loosen them again. That is why Christ said to His disciples, "Why are you troubled, and why do thoughts arise in your hearts?" Luke 24, verse 38. If a passion of fear is upon us, how it does conjure up multitudes of ghastly thoughts that we cannot cause to go down again. They haunt us. They follow us up and down wherever we go. We are pursued by our own thoughts. Thine heart shall meditate on terror, Isaiah 33, verse 18. So when sorrow is upon us, how it does make us study the cross that has been put upon us, which would be an ease to the mind to forget. But a man's passions make his thoughts study it, to say it by heart over and over again. So when love and desire are up, whatever the thing may be that has attracted us, it may be preferment, praise, beauty, riches, it sets our hearts to work to search the thing from top to toe, to make it amiable to us. So when joy is up, we look and look at the thing we rejoice in, we read it over and over, we mark every little bit of it, we do not forget. Yes, we are so inordinate in it that we often cannot sleep for thinking of it. The abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep for the multitude of thoughts in his head. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 12. Solomon writes of the man who is covetous, how the thoughts of the Belshazzars and the Nebuchadnezzars of the world do trouble the world. As in Proverbs 4, verse 16, they sleep not except they have done mischief. If their desires remain unsatisfied, they disturb their thoughts like naughty children crying and crying. These thoughts, which most men think are free, often prove the greatest enslavers and tormentors in the earth to their owners. They hinder sleep, the nurse of nature. They eat out the heart that bred them. They weary the spirits. A man cannot lay them aside as he does his coat. When men die, these follow them to hell and torment them even worse there. Your thoughts are the greatest executioners there, even the worm that never dies. Matthew 9, verse 44.